Singapore has built itself into one of the world's richest countries. But as the pandemic ravages its economy, the government could be facing its toughest election yet. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Alicia Santarelli. Good morning. But first, let's head down under, where tensions continue to ratchet up between Australia and China, its biggest trading partner. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison is suspending its extradition agreement with Hong Kong and offering its locals a pathway to permanent residency. The measures come in response to China's imposition of a new national security law on the city. From Sydney, here's Phil Mercer.
Tens of thousands of Australians are being urged to reconsider staying in Hong Kong. The government in Canberra has warned that security laws imposed by China could see foreigners randomly detained. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison said the legislation weakens the territory's autonomy. His comments are likely to infuriate Beijing. Australia will also suspend an extradition treaty with Hong Kong and offer protection visas to several thousand residents.
China has condemned the moves by Australia, calling it gross interference in its internal affairs. Let's do a quick check of the markets now, because it looks like the UK government's $38 billion stimulus package announced yesterday has failed to lift the FTSE 100, which is currently trading around 0.2% lower. Asia markets, though, all ended on a positive note as Greater China stocks continue to outperform due to a strengthening Chinese currency. Let's turn now to a place that I've called home for many years, the Asian city-state of Singapore. Its ruling party, the PAP, has been in power since the former British colony gained independence in 1965. The tiny tropical island is smaller than New York City, but has the world's seventh highest GDP per capita. In fact, the movie Crazy Rich Asians was set in Singapore, but it isn't all big houses, fancy cars, and glamorous parties. Locals there have struggled with the rising cost of living and widening social inequality, making its economic future central to tomorrow's election. Song Seng-woon is a Singaporean economist at CIMB Bank.
Singapore has always been a safe haven whenever there are places around the region that faces, I suppose, law and order situation, whether there's a degree of political uncertainty. So nothing has changed from there. Whenever there's time of crisis anywhere in other areas, somehow Singapore will see that flows, either in the term of money or in term of people.
One of the issues in this election is Singapore's incredibly expensive property market. By some measures, it's more costly to own a home in Singapore than in New York or London. So what more can the government do there?
When you are among the wealthiest country on the planet, and obviously the reason that is the case is because businesses want to come here, set up shop. The key, obviously, is, and the biggest constraint is the physical size. You're talking about Singapore, smaller than 300 square miles. And so if people want to come and live and work here, means that the cost of the raw ingredient land go up. So it is expensive. So to ensure that people can still afford homes, which is why we have one of the highest home ownership in the world, public housing, we continue to ensure that as long as you start work, and continue working easily for 4.5 years or less than 5 years, you can afford your first home. So this is where I think the big challenge and big differences in how we address the challenges of wealth. That while wealth are being created, you make sure that the lower income are not missed out completely. So which is why it's very targeted in terms of help to ensure that they don't lag behind.
So Seng-woon, we've known each other for years. You usually post photos of Singapore's famous street food on social media. It's a huge foodie nation and it's accompanied by market commentary. So whenever you do go to these hawker centres and speak to the food vendors, what are some of their biggest economic concerns on a day-to-day basis when you talk to them?
If you're talking to the older hawker, who has been, I suppose, running their stores for the last 10 years, 20 years, or even longer for some, their complaint has been, nobody wants to take over my store. My child, my son, my daughter, working in a bank, he's paid a ton, a lot more money than I ever make in a year. So that's their, in a sense, lament. Then you have the other side, the younger hawker, those who have a passion, basically asking, can I make a living? So very interesting in terms of landscape of where they are in terms of how they perceive they can make money in a very competitive food and beverage industry. For the older one, it's really about finding somebody to take over, being able to take over. For the younger one, is can they make money in this environment where it's difficult to get people to spend more if they perceive that they shouldn't be paying more for hawker food.
Song Seng-Win, economist at CIMB Private Banking in Singapore, thanks for your time.
Welcome. Thank you. Take care.
COVID-19 isn't the only virus causing problems in the global economy. Large outbreaks of African swine fever and flu have killed millions of pigs, causing a jump in pork prices and pushing up food inflation. As the virus continues to threaten the global supplies of pork, could the savior be a new breed of homegrown meat alternatives? Well, the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson has been finding out.
China is the world's biggest consumer of meat, and pork is number one. But trouble might be on the horizon. Even before the spectre of COVID-19, African swine flu had turned an uncomfortable focus on the fragility of the pork industry. But is now the time for synthetic meat to shine? David Young thinks so. He's founder of Green Monday, a Hong Kong-based venture best known for Omnipork, a meat alternative made from, amongst other things, shiitake mushrooms, pea, soy and rice.
In China, Taco Bell is one of our partners, and Pizza Express in Asia, they have been using Omnipork for toppings and on their pasta. I think with climate change, pandemic, African swine fever, with avian flu and all that, at some point, governments will also have to look at this as more than just a certain consumer trend, but rather this is about the sustainability of the country and of the world.
David's enthusiastic about the future of synthetic meat, but will it fly with Chinese consumers? Matilda Ho, founder of food technology venture capital group Bits and Bites, says mainstream success isn't a given.
In the top tier cities like Shanghai or Beijing or Guangzhou, the Chinese consumers are known to be the eager experimenters when it comes to new trends to try out. Yet only very few trends can really turn into the sustained behavioral changes. And we have to understand taste is always going to be the first and foremost driver for consumers to convert their behaviors. It won't be the environmental or sustainability concern.
But maybe in the end, price will be the real tipping point. There's certainly money in meat. But in the years ahead, for companies who get it right, the alternatives could prove to be almost priceless. In London, I'm the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson for Marketplace.
And before we go, Marketplace Morning Report is interested in how inequality can play out within families, be it in a household or among generations of the same family. We'd love to hear from you. Email us, we'll look at all of them, and use the address morningreport@marketplace.org. In London, I'm Leisha Santarelli with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.